In colonial Virginia, life didn't begin with a question but with a structure. Before a child could even understand his own name, a place was already reserved for him in the invisible map of society, family, land, church, the nearest river, the muddy roads connecting plantations, the rhythm of the harvests, and above all, the hierarchy. Into that world, born of the blend between European ambition and American reality, came George Washington on February 22, 1732, in the region of Westmoreland County, along the Potomac River. It was the 18th century, a time of expansion, imperial tensions, and new promises that still hadn't learned to pronounce themselves as freedom. From the very first day, Washington's life was crossed by a fundamental contradiction. Virginia was a land of opportunity, but also of ironclad limits, a wealthy colony, yet sustained by an unequal system, a space of the future, though marked by the weight of the past. Being born there was not a neutral event. It was a form of inheritance, even before owning property or giving speeches. His childhood did not unfold in a romantic void but within a concrete social machine, where reputation was worth almost as much as money, and where character was defined not by what one felt, but by what one was able to contain. To understand who Washington was, it's useful to go back to the texture of that setting. Virginia, at the beginning of the 18th century, was a well-established British colony organized around export agriculture, especially tobacco. Land was power. Whoever owned large estates controlled the local economy, prestige, and a decisive part of regional politics. It wasn't just about producing, but about belonging to a class that considered itself the natural heir to command. That elite, known as the gentry, was not an official aristocracy in the European style, but it did function as a practical aristocracy. It managed courts, presided over assemblies, distributed favors, and decided the fate of communities. In that social order, the Washingtons already had a respectable name. They were not, however, the most powerful family in the colony. Their position was good, but not imposing. And that difference, which may seem minor, had a profound impact. Washington grew up knowing he was inside the right circle, though not at its center. That kind of place produces a quiet impulse. Someone born at the absolute peak can afford a certain relaxation. Someone born near it, but not quite at the top, often develops a mix of prudence and ambition that stays with them for life. At that midpoint, the future leader's first psychological mold was forged, a man who learned to observe, measure, and wait for the exact moment to assert himself. His father, Augustine Washington, was a resourceful landowner, dedicated to agriculture as well as activities related to trade and iron mining. Augustine was not a dreamer but a practical man, shaped by the need to maintain and expand the family estate. He had inherited lands, but he had also known how to move pieces intelligently in a world that rewarded the disciplined. His vision was that of a settled colonizer. He worked to ensure continuity, not to seek adventures with no return. In a context where death was frequent and the future could change within weeks, building stability was a form of power. George's mother, Mary Ball Washington, brought another kind of influence. If the father represented the economic structure, the mother embodied the moral structure. Mary has historically been described as a strong-willed, demanding woman, not inclined to easy tenderness. Over the years, her figure transformed almost into a symbol of domestic severity. Still, reducing her to a stereotype would be unfair. The women of that world had no margin for constant sentimentality. The emotional and material survival of a family depended on rigorous control, firm decisions, and a daily discipline that rarely received public recognition. Mary raised her son with the logic of scarcity and responsibility. She prepared him to endure, not to complain.